recording now. As you can see, it's moving. Okay? It's recording.
Now, as we look at the time, I think we need to start, irrespective of whatever the situation, and we don't really need a call-up here. Today, we've got humana, people to people, that are going to be talking to us. We are going to be giving over to them, and I think they are ready to make the presentation to us. Are you ready, Humana? Oh, you are ready. Okay. There are document members that you could pick up and talk about Humana, people to people. They're going to leave them here, so if anybody wants this document, when we move out, we could have them. Maybe they left it like this. Let's just leave them here so that when the members are going out, they can take them. Okay. Humana, welcome. You are meeting the portfolio committee for help. You can switch off your mic for a minute. You're meeting, this is the people from Parliament, and it's the committee for health that you're seeing in front of you. I would just like them to introduce themselves to you so that you know who you're talking to. I'm sure you're going to forget their names in any case, but it doesn't matter. Let them tell you who they are. Okay, we'll start with Ms. Khwale. If you could tell us who you are, and then we'll go around.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Morosi Sekhale Tsoi. I'm a member of this committee from North West Province.
My name is Dina Susan, and I'm a member of this committee.
Morning, my name is Emma More from Gauteng, member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Mark Waters, member of the committee.
Morning, my name is Annie Fuchen, I'm a member of the committee.
Okay, thank you, member. You'll remember, members, that our work is to oversight and probably meet people who have got complaints, especially around the Department of Health. And at some times we meet people who say they can assist in making the Department of Health better than what it is, or assist in whatever way. We invited Humana people to people to tell us what they are doing, that we think that it can contribute to improving the health systems or the way that we are dealing with health in South Africa. So they are here with us. We'll give over to you, Humana people to people.
Yes, we will also introduce ourselves briefly. My name is Lorna Torbenson. I'm a Scandinavian, you can hear from my name. But I've been living in South Africa for the last 12 years, and I'm the partnership director and vice chairman of Humana People to People.
Have you been counted?
I'm still a temporary. I'm seeking now permanent residency.
Good morning. My name is Kilford Simonde. I'm the national coordinator for the TC program, the one that we are going to present today.
All right, but maybe before we go into we are going to talk to the presentation, but maybe just as a little bit of background information. We met with Dr. Kokwana. It's almost a year ago. Time is flying, isn't it? And we presented who we are and what we are doing and our strength in community mobilization. And then at that time, we decided that maybe it was good we came and presented to the whole committee. So here we are today then. So what we can say, basically what we want to achieve from this presentation is your interest and support, and of course a lot of questions to what we... how we think we can assist government in the re-engineering of primary health care. We have followed the debate. We have been very much involved in community mobilization the last years in this country, and we think it's a good development, this of streamlining, making primary health care more efficient and linking up to, so that there's a close linkages between communities and the clinics. And that's where we think our strengths come in, because we know what it takes to do community mobilization, that it takes quite a lot of effort, and that's where we have built our capacity. And what we want to achieve with this is, we have been funded from Global Fund, from USA, but as we all know, international donor funding will not continue to come to South Africa. And that's where we are now seeking a closer partnership with government, so that we can continue and build on the experiences we have gained. But then we also need to buy in from government, also financially, because as you all know, we cannot do the work if there's no funding to do it. If there's no money for the manager, if there's no money for the data capture, if there's no money for running the car, we need to find a way where we can come in and give support, use our experiences, but government has to engage also by giving financial support. Now we will start and talk to the presentation. So what we are going to do is, we are going to give a brief about Minor People to People South Africa and the program called TCE, which stands for Total Control of the Epidemic. And it's a program basically directed towards HIV and AIDS and TB. But we aim to make it broader. And then the TCE concept on the Community Health Worker Program, and then the way forward. So briefly about Minor People to People. We are a national NGO, but we are a member of an international federation called Minor People to People, who work in 40 countries around the world. And Minor People to People was established in the 70s, and is now operating in most of the savage countries, and also in Asia and Central America. We started our operations in 1995 in South Africa, and our goal is basically to give support to underprivileged people, working with communities, strengthening communities to meet their own demands. I mean, we don't have any ambition about changing the big setup of the world. I mean, we are living in a world with big disparities between rich and poor, but what we basically do is that we work with the poor in order to assist them or work with them to meet the challenges that they have. We leave the big politics to government. What we then can say is that in South Africa today, we are working four development projects. Well, one is called Child Aid, which was our very first project, which we started in Soweto in 1998, which is basically working with communities to create safe and healthy environment for children. The other project is Hope Humana, which is an HIV and AIDS project, doing outreach both with seeking to prevent the further spread of HIV and AIDS, but also work with communities to reduce the impact of the epidemic. Then Total Control of the Epidemic, which we are talking more about today, also known as TCE, that is our big program, the flagship program, where we are today operating in 5 provinces. We have reached more than 3 million people on the door-to-door campaign. And we can clearly see strong impact of the program for people to take control of HIV and AIDS in their lives, and now also working on TB and other diseases. Then we operate a project called Humana Youth in Action. That's a new project we started last year, because we can see that we need to engage young people in South Africa in a more positive way. There's a lot of problems with unemployment and education and so, but young people need to be engaged in their own country's development, in their community's development. So that's what we do through the Humana Youth in Action program. And today, we are 5 provinces. It doesn't mean that we want to limit ourselves to those 5 provinces, but it's Gauteng, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal.
Then I will talk about the TCE program. we, generally speaking, we don't look at ourselves as a non-governmental organization. We look at ourselves as solidarity humanists. We look at ourselves as people who stand shoulder to shoulder with the poor and assist the poor to come out of the situation where they are. The motto for the TC program is only the people can liberate themselves from the epidemic. And it's a very strong political statement, and it's coming from the liberation processes in Southern Africa as such, where communities, individuals and communities took up arms to liberate themselves. And it wasn't because there was a promise for a salary after liberation, it was because people decided to stand. There was a problem that needed to be solved. And people, individual by individual, from all walks of life, lawyers, doctors, PSNs, and workers, they stood up against colonialism, for example. And the TC program itself, it's coming from that thinking. How can we mobilize the community and individuals to stand up with the same spirit that was there during the liberation struggle? Because the magnitude of the problem is in fact the same, that we need the community to stand up, we need the community to liberate themselves as such. So that's like the base for the program, and that's also where this concept of total control is coming from. If you look at it at a national level, your immediate reaction could be no, but it's not possible to have total control of the epidemic. But we are starting at an individual level. Is it not possible for an individual to have total control of the epidemic in their own life? For them to go and get a test, and when they are tested, when they know their results, whether negative or positive, can they not take steps and say, I know my results, I'm negative, and I'll do everything that is necessary not for me to get infected. I've tested, I know my results, I'm positive, and I know I will do A, B, C, D to remain to be a responsible citizen and a productive citizen and participate in the economy and do a lot more things and not spread the virus. And we think it is possible. And that is the reason why the TC program is zeroing in on the individual, first and foremost. We are moving in from the placards, from addressing people in groups, zero in at the individual. The field officers that we train, they will move from house to house, door to door, meet each individual and discuss that individual about the issues that they have, that they need to solve. And in that way, then they get liberated and they get to participate in the whole process. So that's the concept and that's where it's coming from. And that's why we believe there should be total control of the epidemic. The idea of the program is to empower the individual to take a defined stand against HIV and AIDS and TB in their life through repeated mobilization, information dissemination, education, and basic counseling. What we have done is we have developed some tools that we call the perpendicular estimate system. That's a tool that has got a set of demands that each individual has to go through, starting from when the field officer approaches the individual, they register them in the House of the Register. Then they go to the first stage. How much information, basic facts, does the person have about HIV and AIDS? Not academic, the basic facts. They know about HIV and AIDS, that's the virus, how it's transmitted, how to protect themselves, and so on and so forth. If there are myths and misconceptions, then the field officer is there to help the individual, you know, deal with those myths and misconceptions. Give them pamphlets, refer them to other CBOs, refer them to the Department of Health, give them information to read so that they are clear. Second step, you have to test it. What challenges do you have in testing? Discuss with the person, find out what are the fears, whether from the clinic, whether from wherever, until the person is mobilized and is confident enough to be able to go and test. Third step, if you discuss with your partner, is your partner also tested? Because it's not enough that you now you know your own status. Are you discussing this with your partner? What are the challenges? Can I come as a field officer and be part of your discussion about HIV and AIDS in your relationship and so on? And for us, the field officers are not academics. They are not professors. They are not supposed to, you know, to know a lot about HIV and AIDS. Of course, it's a basic, but what they are supposed to do is to provoke the individual. Because there is a lot of information out there. The task of the field officer is to provoke. If the field officer meets a man who has got five wives, the man should start to, maybe I need to cut with my relationship. This is where my risk is. If the field officer meets a man who doesn't use condoms after the visit, the man should start to think, I have to start to use condoms. So the idea is for the field officer to provoke, hit people in the heart, make them realize that they are at risk, and they are at risk, and the risk is on them. It's also, for us, the field officer is not going there saying, I'm fighting HIV and AIDS. We say it up front, the field officers are not fighting HIV and AIDS. It's you. It's your task, it's your responsibility. Me as the field officer, I can only provide a platform. I can assist you with information, I can link you up, we can discuss, but it's your responsibility. So that is also upfront in the training of the field officer, that they go and give the ball to the community for the community take up a stand. So that's the idea. So the concept is that we define an area of 100,000 people. That's what we call a CC area. And in that area of 100,000 people, we recruit, train, and deploy 50 local people as field officers. And these people, they've got 3 years as field officers to systematically move from house to house, reaching individuals at a person-to-person level with information, education, mobilization, and basic counseling. So what it means is that each field officer has got 2,000 people. And that's 2,000 including the young, the old, and everybody. Where we calculate that basically about 1,500 people who are sexually active, who would be the prime target. And the task, like we said, is that the field officer will go to the same person again and again and again. They have the household register. And in the beginning, everybody in each household is registered in the household register. And then the household register is put down with all those demands I was talking about. That the person has the basic information on HIV and AIDS, are they tested, is their partner tested, what are they doing themselves in their own community. So after registering them, the field officer will go back to the person step by step until the person has gone through out all those demands. And then when they've done that, they declare themselves what we call TC compliant. This is for them to say, I know everything about HIV and AIDS, and I've taken a defined stand on HIV and AIDS. So we think that 3 years is a good enough period for the field officer to go through those 2,000 people. I might need 5 visits, where Lola might need 2 visits. So it will depend on individuals. Some will get 2 visits and they are compliant. Some will have more repeated visits. Before I move from this one, what we have also realized for this to happen, because we are coming from that political sentiment that it's only the people who can liberate themselves, we have also very fast learned that it's not everybody who can be field officer. Because it's humble work, it's of knocking on people's doors, talking to them. It's very humbling work. So we have also, in the whole process, identified who can make a very good field officer. It's not the person who has got flying colors in matric, unfortunately, because those ones may use the program as a stepping stone because they are willing to go to university, they want to do something else in their life, they are looking for a job. We are looking in the communities, the people who would want to do something about HIV and AIDS in their community, first and foremost. Of course, they will get a stipend, but it's not about employment. And that's why the program is 3 years. It's those people who say, I have read enough of HIV and AIDS in my community, and I want to do something about it. It's somebody who is also living with HIV and AIDS, or somebody who has lost a relative to HIV and AIDS, but they have, before they come into the program, they have an agenda against HIV and AIDS already. So we have a very elaborate interview process to identify that kind of cadre that would be willing and willing. Very passionate about HIV and AIDS. Now, the TC
movement. I just like to add to that very shortly because, I mean, that's when we recruit people and we give them initial training. That's the process to see who are really willing to do this job. The next is also that we know it's a continuous process. It's about keeping them, you know, because it's a hard work and it's very difficult work. especially in the start where they are not known in the community, people seem to be like a little bit skeptical. But then we have these ongoing meetings where they meet every week and they support each other, they get additional training so that they can, and the result we can see is that we get very strong field officers.
Okay, the TC program itself, because one question that always many times come up is it not duplicating what is already happening on the ground and so on. But actually the program is designed to function in an area where there has been activity. In my introduction I said, for example, we are moving from billboards and addressing people in groups. So we are moving in communities where people have got information. But the challenge is, how are people using the information? When we do a baseline survey, over 98% of the people, they know about HIV/AIDS, they know how it's transmitted, they know that they have to use condoms. But are we not getting new infections? We are still getting new infections, and that's where the challenge is. And it's because the billboard and the radio, they are very good programs, but they don't address the individual problem that the person has. If the facilities account is discussing here, I might be trying to say, but I've got three girlfriends and I've got a problem with that. But if the facilitator come and sit with me, I would be much more free to say, hey, I'm married, but hey, I've got two other girlfriends on the side. I was thinking it's okay. Because now it's in another environment. But in an open environment, probably I'm Christian or I'm whatever, I might not be able to come out and discuss deeper. So that's where the program comes in. Not as duplicating, but supporting actually what is happening on the ground. So we work very much together with government departments at the local level. We work with municipalities, which provide political and social leadership through the local leaders. What do we do with the TC program? Before we recruit anybody for 1 month, our project leaders, whom we call division commanders, they will go and make presentations to all the local leaders, traditional leaders, administrative leaders, the councillors, church leaders, leaders of NGOs and CBOs who are operating in that area, present the TC program the same way as we are presenting here, so that there is complete buy-in and interest. And the whole idea of the program is that the local leadership are the ones that should continue to lead the program in life. We work with the Department of Health because it provides us with the technical and policy direction. They approve some of the education. They come and address the field officers. The field officers participate in promoting the government programs, the ACT campaign, the PMTCT program, ARV, TB, condoms, and so on. That is the best situation in South Africa, is that most of the services are available. The condoms are available. Testing facilities are there. ARVs are in the clinic. The challenge is the uptake. And that's where the program comes in handy to say, you have to use these services that are available. We work with the Department of Social Development, promotion of government grants, social support systems, refer people for ARV, form support groups at the district level. We work with the Department of Education, where field officers are active in schools, where they can go and give lessons in the morning assembly. They can have clubs with children after school. We also work with other NGOs and CPOs. And you could also say that the field officers as such, the program initially is focusing on HIV and AIDS, but when we learn it very fast, when the field officer knocks on people's doors, abuse comes in, alcohol comes in, many other things that they would on the surface might not have to do with HIV and AIDS come into the discussion because they are related in a way. So the program is touches on a number of issues. Questions of material health and women's health. We start support, but maybe the effort that I want to say on this slide is that the focus for the field officer is the door-to-door campaign, and then they work with other NGOs to provide all the other services. But if there is no NGO or CBO or a department that is providing services, the field officer would have to create that service. For example, if a social officer is working in an area and there's a network for people living with HIV and AIDS that is for support group, the social officer will work with that network. If they meet a person in the house that needs to join a support group, they refer to that support group. If they meet a person who needs home-based care, they will refer for home-based care. But if there's no network or there's no support group, the field officer would have to start a support group in the field, because in fact that support is needed for people who they would have mobilized to go and test. And then the next two slides is just to highlight how we are organized currently in South Africa and which programs we have, and also to see the structure that organizes this whole scenario. How does at the bottom here? It says here area number 5, and it's 50 field officers. In TC language, we call that a troop. A group of 50 field officers is a troop, and 5 troops will make up what we call a division. And 5 divisions will make what we call a corps. So in South Africa, we've got 2 corps. One of it is the one that is covering Mpumalanga and Limpopo, where we've got programs that are being funded by USAID. There we've got 2 TC programs and 2 HOPE programs. The first program is TC Ehlanzeni, it's in Ngomazi. We've got 4 TC areas there with 200 field officers. And then TC Mupane, in Mupane, the whole Mupane district, 250 field officers. And then you have got Hope Bushbuck Ridge in Bushbuck Ridge and Hope Mupane in Zanini. And then the second core is in KZN in Eastern Cape, but the core is based in KZN. We have got 4 divisions there. The 2 of them are new, about to start, TC in Etequini. Going to be 4 TC areas in Etequini, and it's funding from Global Fund. And then we've got TC in Zululand. It's a partnership that's still in the pipeline together with the KZN provincial government for 200 field officers under the Premier's Ambassador Program. Youth Ambassador Program. They're still on the pipeline, they're not there on the ground, we hope that before the end of the year will be running. And the TC 11 in the 11th district in KZN, it was 150 field officers, it will also be closing out by the end of this year. And then TC Amatole in Eastern Cape, there we had 2 TC areas. And initially, one of the areas was funded by Amatole district, municipality, but it's a global fund funded area. So that's the structure that we have. The reason for the organization is both political and it is administrative, but for us the emphasis is on the political side. Ordinarily on a daily basis, the field officers are alone in their field. But they gain their strength and their energy and their motivation in that they are passionate, but in that they know that there are many other field officers who are doing exactly the same work. So on a weekly basis, they belong to a group of 10 that we call a patrol, and also a group of 50 that we call a troop. In the group of 10, like Lorna said, we give them initial training, and many times it's very academic, but the day they start to knock on people's doors, that's where most of the learning starts, because the real questions come, real situations arise. There is a woman who knows the husband is cheating, she has later that she has found, but she has got 5 children and she doesn't know what to do because the husband doesn't want to use condom. Now the field officer finds himself in this situation. So in that group of 10, every week they meet to share experiences. This is the scenario I found in this household. How do I deal with this? How do I advise this woman? How do I be together with them and so on and so forth? They do this in the presence of somebody who has got more experience in community mobilization. On a weekly basis, in that group of 50, then we invite also experts from outside. It might be the local member of parliament and somebody from the Department of Health to come and address the field officers on subjects that they are finding in that community, and also to come up with more strategies on how to address issues that are coming out of that community. And it's also very critical for us because that's where they are gaining their energy. These levels of profession are not the ones who go to the international conferences. They are not the ones who go to the national conferences in any case. So we have created a platform where at their own level they can also share experiences the same way the experts go to international conferences and share lessons learned and so on. So in their group, they meet and share. And we try as much as possible that in the whole division, the 250 field officers, at least once or twice a year, they also meet at that level where there are 200 field officers and share and say, in my field, this is what I'm finding and challenges, and this one also say, and we invite experts to come and talk to them. And that's where the energy and the interest and the passion to drive the field officers also comes from. And in that way, the field officers benefit and the community benefits because then they continue to be interested to be in the community. Now, on the way forward, Humana People to People South Africa would want to be a strong partner in the rollout of the re-engineering of the community health worker program in South Africa. We believe that the structures of TCE and the community mobilization level fit well to be used as a framework for the revised community health worker program. We suggest a partnership with the government where we include, train, lead, and monitor community health workers into a strong provincial program to strengthen people's basic health. We can also extend the work of the field officers to address broader public health questions with child and maternal health, HIV and AIDS, TB, chronic non-communicable diseases, as well as violence and injury. The Department of Health has come up with the Community Health Worker Program, and I think you are familiar with this re-engineering of the primary health primary health care, where they are recruiting six community health workers who are going to be stationed at each clinic, and four professionals in health, a health promoter, environmental health facilitator, and so on and so forth. And the idea is to have the field officers or the community health workers in this instance working out to 250 households on a door-to-door campaign, promote health, a broad range of health from maternal health and mother health, HIV and AIDS, and so on and so forth. And then it is our thinking or our proposal that we have got a lot of experience. This TCE concept that we have developed, and we've been implementing in South Africa for 9 years now, and in the region for almost 12 years in the SADC region, because we're not only implementing in South Africa, we're also implementing in the SADC region. So we have got a lot of experience on how to identify who would make a very good community health worker. We have got passion, we have got interest, we have got drive, and also how to organize the whole concept itself. That the while they are attached to the clinic, they don't become part of the clinic. That this of going out into the community and being with the community doesn't die away. That this, they belong to a much broader kind of activities who are active in the community by belonging to that structure of being in a patrol and being in a troop, as opposed to being isolated on a clinic where you're just a group of six and you don't know what is happening in the other clinic. So we think we have got a lot of experiences and capacities that we can bring to that community mobilization component, because that's where our strength is, and that's where we think we can be able to bring a lot of energy there. Here we highlighted some of the production figures, and of course this can change with depending on what the government wants produce, but we put 12 main figures. The idea of this is to indicate that, you know, over the 3 years of the TC program, the production figures for the field officers are cut out. They know from day one until the last day how many people they are supposed to reach on a single day, how many households they are supposed to move, how many condoms they are supposed to distribute, how many people they have to get organized to get tested, how many campaigns, and so on. And at the same time, while we emphasize very much on this production, It is very clear in the minds of the field officer that this is not about statistics. This is about people. That they have to have pride in how many people they have moved through mobilization. So, I will not go into the details of the production figures themselves, but it does say that when they are in the field, we know that the production that is happening. And we can also verify using the household register, because in the household register, the field officers, they are putting in the names and for people and the addresses. So we can take the household register, go to the household, did you get a visit from the field officer, what was the discussion, where you had, well, how can we improve it? And the whole idea of the whole structure around the field officer is to support the field officer. It's not to go and find faults and then hit them in the head for not doing their work, because their work is being based on passion. It's to go and find out how can we support them to continue to do the good work that they are doing in the community. So the 12-man figures are the production figures for the field officer as an individual in their own field. This is what they have to go for over the 3 years. And then the figures in the patrol inventory is the figure that the field officers produce together with others. Either it's a team of 10 or it's a team of 50, together with the Department of Health, together with other NGOs in campaigns and so on and so forth, in extra programs. So these are the figures that they get in a partnership with activities with others, and they are also very verifiable. Like first column is showing awareness campaigns, which they can do with the Department of Health. Well, SDA, for example, is one good campaign that the field officers do together with the Department of Health. Campaigns to reach the most risk population, while daily they are going on door to door, they also organize campaigns to reach commercial sex workers, truck drivers, farm workers in the areas where they are operating. Campaigns with other government departments, they can also participate if the Department of Home Affairs says now they want a campaign to get people to get birth certificates and IDs, the field officers can be used to mobilize and get that information out. And then we've got extra programs. These are programs in schools, in workplaces, in churches, in some places where there is a structure where the field officer can come in and initially give a lesson before they go into individual sessions. And then the last one, I want to say more about this one. We call it the Passion for People movement. From day one, the idea of the program is to recruit a local volunteers, whom we call passionate, to be active in the program. For us, the passionate is a very simple person, the one who has got excess time, excess effort, that they want to use to do something in their own community about HIV/AIDS. One good example I always give is there is a local business person in a community who goes to a town to buy, to order his things for his shop. And then if they are passionate, when they go to town, where the Department of Health has got an office, they can pass through the Department of Health and collect a carton of condoms to take to their village. And that's passionate. It's extra effort that they have used. It's not extra money, but that effort of bringing condoms where they might not be in the outlying village, That's a passionate for us. A passionate is a retired school teacher who says, okay, every Wednesday, all the youth in my community, I would want to meet with them and we discuss and we do something with the youth. That's a passionate. So we have what we call the Passion for People movement. It's a structure that after 3 years, we would live in the community where people themselves do activities to support the effort against HIV and AIDS. So they will start clubs, they will have income generating activities, committees for orphans, they will have libraries, and they can distribute condoms. Yes, so that was the presentation. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, now we are open to questions. We would very much like before we go from here, so it's not now we made the lesson, we go and say goodbye and we forget everything about each other. For us, it would be important. I mean, we can be here until lunchtime, it's no problem. We can talk further. Or we can, of course, also keep in contact in other ways. But it's important for us to actually start to engage, because we are working with the Department of Health. We've been part of the NERD Center meetings in connection with the ACT campaign. but we are still struggling to find a way how we can actually be fully integrated in that new re-engineering of primary health care. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure you know the faces that have just come in. If you're saying you're working in KZN, there are people that have just come in. We welcome you, KZN. Okay. Members, the reason we thought it was probably not a waste of time in calling them to talk to us. I think one area that we have noticed as we're moving around that was not done well in primary healthcare, especially in our people who are a big percentage of our people are illiterate. Now, when you talk of primary healthcare, it's about making people be aware of the health conditions so that they can prevent them. And we thought that this is one of the NGOs that probably is trying to do that. So we thought it was important just to call them so that you could ask them questions, especially with the shortage of human resources in health that we have. Probably this will help in teaching people, making them take control of their conditions and their health. So it was on that basis. And as they are telling us that they are mobilizing people to take charge of their conditions. And I think it's not only about HIV and AIDS and TB, it goes beyond that. And in fact, I think you've got a lot of information that you have which goes beyond health. And which is very important for us to be able to plan to suggest to the department that they must plan. But sometimes you get worried. Sometimes there's conditions we survive because people are not taking charge of their conditions. So we go to them, they're illiterate, then you just say they must vote Kotwana. And they don't ask questions, they say, oh, they must vote Kotwana. Sometimes, now if you make them aware, you make them take charge of that, then they must not vote me because they might ask me a lot of questions that I might not be able to answer. So it might be a disadvantage for me if I was winning because of people being illiterate, not knowing what they want. But if you make them aware, I'm trying to say there might be a negative thing for me as a politician, but that's a joke. Okay, members, do you have any questions for them? I see Ume Sekhwale and then Ume More. Those are the two.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. You know, my problem always is we are having so many NGOs which are dealing with HIV, TB, and I would like to see one day, Chairperson, whereby we are having them all. I don't know if it's possible. So that we should be knowing how do they work to it with each other. Like when I was listening to the presentation, is not far from what life can tell us. Or life, or laugh, or dark it, all those things. And having so many NGOs, when one look at the epidemic, is it improving, what is really happening? Because most of you see that the right hand is doing something and the left hand does not. And my question will be, how does HPP work with other NGOs which you are dealing with what you are talking about in the same province, in the same vicinity, so that you should avoid duplication? Because most often we'll be talking about money. When you started, you just talk about money, and I became a little bit of concerned to be saying that if Global Fund was continue funding you, would you be sitting here and telling us what you are talking? Are you only coming here because you are saying that, as we know, Global Fund is no more going to pass. Therefore, I would want to know what is the relation. The other one, 10%, is the province, the five provinces, Gauteng, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. Fortunately, we have gone to some of the provinces. And one would even want to really know, how involved are you in the strategic plan and the annual plan or annual report of this, the department? Because one, while sitting here, when we talk about health, health is only one. It won't be health when it's in the department or health when it's at HP is one. Now, we do have the report of the National Department of Health, starting from their strategies. But we never see where they use yourself as strategies to deal with other things. Because when you do plans, you'll be saying, this is what I want to achieve, and maybe put the target and the time and who's responsible. And who's responsible, sometimes I would be wanting to see HPP as the one which is going to do this from the Department of Health. You are saying you are working with them. I would like to know, how do you work with them? Unfortunately, as the chair has said, the KwaZulu-Natal is just here, and we are having them. Why don't they make mention of you in their report? You may not be knowing why they don't do that, but that's my take. But it is very important for us to really integrate and collaborate for us to really fight the HIV. I like your political statement, because that is really what is supposed to be. Lastly, the issue of behavioral change, moral regeneration, because we know that I don't say that when people are HIV it's because they don't have morals, but I'm saying that the issue of morals has a lot to do with the HIV. How do you tackle it? Thank you,
Chair. So thank you very much. Members?
Thank you very much. I think it's slide number 2, where you say it is active in 5 provinces, Gauteng. I'm from Gauteng. I've never heard of you people. It will be interesting to know where exactly have you done some work, or currently doing some work. And then your field officers, do they get a stipend? How do you go about it? And then is the issue of funding again, as it has been, you know, asked. Do you get anything from the government so far? And then if so, I mean, what percentage is it? And then I think I'm also concerned that, because how many NGOs in South Africa, honestly speaking, but the epidemic is becoming disastrous year by year. I know we're talking about, as already honorable members alluded, behavioral change, which is very, very, very difficult to deal with. But it will be interesting to actually, if you can also maybe share with us, how do you see yourself playing a role in the re-engineering, as we are saying, okay, you've listed that you'd like to recruit, blah, 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 all those things, but is that all what, you know, you will be doing for the government? Because for me, it doesn't make sense. The government can, you know, still do some of the things for themselves. And the last one is the comment. I love your political, what you call your political statement, because the government can do so much, but if people don't start changing themselves as individuals and liberate themselves, you know, this is we're losing the fight.
Thank you, Chair. although some of the questions have been asked, but I would like to make mention of some points in those questions. May I know why is it not active in other provinces? What are you going to do with these remaining provinces so as to become active even then? Two, do you have enough time to visit all the little individuals or have enough field workers or whatever to help you to do this successfully? How do you go about to the local people, that is the donors, all those people you have mentioned? Do they give you good support or accept you accordingly? The other question is that who is paying these field workers or community field workers? Are they doing this job voluntarily? Who is doing monitoring? Because they need even to be monitored, even then. So as to find out, are they doing this accordingly? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you for the presentation. I've just got a few questions. The ones to do with the re-engineering or turnaround strategy for primary healthcare. You said you don't know where you fit into it. But looking at it, I mean, from what we've been briefed on, is that the government is intending to employ community health workers over 250 households. So, I mean, if that is the case, where does that leave you as an NGO? If the government is going to be visiting every single household through their own community health workers, which will be employed by the department. And if that is the case at all, then why would government want to fund you if they're going to have their own community health workers and other NGOs for that matter? So if you could just maybe give your views on that. And then also, as far as you mentioned as well, that most people understand, you know, how HIV spreads and that condoms have to be used in order to prevent it being spread, but it's obviously not happening given the rate of new infections. I mean, it's obviously, to a large degree, it's a cultural issue as well, where men have the power, unfortunately, and many women don't, and women can't insist on men wearing condoms, unfortunately. How are you addressing that specific issue when you go door to door and you're educating men in particular about the use of condoms?
Thank you. Those are the questions. If you could just go through them so that by 11 o'clock we are over. But one other thing that probably will be very interested in is to, you have been doing this in South Africa in certain provinces. Yeah, whatever. But it would be of interest to tell us what has been the impact of what you're doing. Has it had an impact? Or is there no impact at all? If there's no impact, why is there no impact?
Maybe I can start. And then probably I can start with your impact question, isn't it? One of the books that are there is an evaluation study done by the Human Sciences Research Council in Tubate. And it shows the impact that the program has in generating uptake for government services, which we think it's exactly what we intended with the program in a way. Many people declaring themselves TC compliant, many structures being started in the district that continue to function afterwards. And there are two programs that we have evaluated. Is the one in Sikukune, which is the Human Science Research Council one. And then we've got another one for the program in Bushbuck Ridge, but we don't have the... we can send that document also. And these are the two external ones. I'm mentioning the external ones. We do our own internal evaluation also for program development. But many times when you talk about your own, like you are ringing your own bell, and that's why we are emphasizing these two that are external, particularly the Human Science Research Council one. It's very informative of the impact of the program and that. And then I'll go to the questions. The first one is about.
Okay, we will supplement each other just because I was very keen to say something about the question around there are so many NGOs. Because, I mean, yes, we work very closely with other NGOs. I mean, at national level and at very much at local level. And I mean, I think it also comes along with the strengthening of government leadership. I think maybe it can be illustrated best that what is happening now, we have gotten a lot of our funding from the American government, from USAID, and that's how we started to our program. And we could see in the beginning, and I think it's recognized by government itself, it's recognized by the USAID, that the programs were not working together. It was like USAID was working in one tunnel and government was working in another. I don't think we should think that that has been a waste of time or a waste of energy. Of course, when things are coordinated, especially I think where Department of Health gives leadership, then the impact will definitely be higher. There's no doubt about it. But we shouldn't look at it as if what has been done has not been done. I mean, we have reached more than 3 million people in their homes. We have talked with these people, and they have taken a stand. Okay, they may not take a stand. Maybe it doesn't last 100% because we also know that what you're up against with HIV/AIDS is a difficult challenge. So yes, we know and we coordinate where we are as much as we possibly can. When the local AIDS councils were established, it was a blessing because it meant that we actually had a forum. NGOs started to have a forum together with the Department of Health where we could start to coordinate. But seen from our point of view as an NGO, we don't see it as a waste. We see, yes, we need to strengthen coordination. We need especially to strengthen Department of Health leadership. Because it is the Department of Health who has to take the leadership. We cannot, as an NGO, take the leadership in Sekukune District. We cannot. We can do whatever we can to work with government. We can do whatever we can to work with government also to coordinate. But it is the task of government to take the leadership. And where they take the leadership, NGOs can also play a greater role. There's no doubt about it. But I don't think we should feel like there are so many NGOs and what are we doing. There are NGOs at many different levels. There are very professional NGOs who work nationally. And then there are the small NGOs who are committed local people who make an effort. Home-based care, working with the children. They do a tremendous work every day. Yes, it should be coordinated. But I can tell you from our experiences from the field, we are doing absolutely the best to serve those communities. And what we experience is...
I think, Lena,
it's too long.
The basic question is coming from politicians.
Too passionate about it. Okay.
Let me explain this one.
Yeah.
Okay. That's your answer. The question is coming from politicians.
Yeah.
And politicians, more often, they see beyond what you are telling them that you are doing. Now, the question here is, NGOs, many NGOs, they've got an experience of the politicians themselves. They find that though they talk this, but they are interested in getting money from government or from wherever. And they are interested in that money. It's not in the actual work that is done. So that's part of the question. The second part of the question is that you are saying you're going from house to house. You should be having information as you go there as to how many other people came to this place. As much as you are talking about development being the leader, you should be giving that information to the leadership of government and say, government, we went to this many households, And we found that in this house, there were so many other angels that came into the same house that we went to. So you must be on the know, so that you could help in actually putting in the leadership and making sure that there's one organization or there's an integration. That is the question that is coming. Now, if the interest is in the money, it's not in doing what you're not going to tell the government that there are so many angels that went into that particular house, because you wouldn't want to venture on that information. Because you still want to call him. But if you give that information, you know that you might actually collapse yourself. That is the question that is coming from the politician.
We can only tell from our experience. And we think that there is actually a misconception. Yes, we know there might be NGOs out there who do it for the money. But we see the opposite picture all the time. NGOs, CBOs, SBOs doing work without money. I mean, it's like, we hear this often, we even hear the minister talking about it, that the same people go into the same. We work with other community health workers that are there, we work side by side. But we don't feel it's like there's too much service here. We feel it's the opposite. There's a big lack of services. People are in despair. Yes, we need to coordinate, of course. The few resources that are there need to be coordinated. But let's not take this as our frustration. Let's go forward, let's move forward, let's get things strengthened and coordinated, yes. But let's not look backwards and say, we've not done good. We have done a lot good, and we are still on that road to do better and better and better. That's the only thing I can say.
You would be answering me if you were saying, let me make an example of, we went to a household in Mangozi, and when we went to that household, we found that there were two other NGOs that had gone there. And this is the information that we are not saying that, as if you don't find other NGOs. When you ask them, you don't ask them about the other NGOs who have visited them. Or you just say, we are here, we want you to know about condoms, we want to know about... You don't ask them whether there are any other people that have visited them. I'm asking about the integration.
No, we don't ask them that question. But we know, basically, because field officers live their lives and work in that community. So they know what's going on. With the strategic planning, and then we can also be embarrassed when we have the colleagues from Gauteng sitting here and say, I don't know Humana people to people. I mean, but we hear it again and again. We've been working, we started the first TV area in Gauteng in 2002. So we've been in the province for 10 years. And it's not that we haven't reported. It's not that we haven't knocked the doors on provincial government, but we've been in several meetings. But, and maybe we have not done it well enough, but definitely, we've been there, we have knocked doors, we've been telling what we've been doing. We have very strong collaboration at the Bell. We started in Soweto and then Bramfisherville. We had very good collaboration with clinics in that area. We went to the West Rand. We've been working in the West Rand since 2004. So we've been there. We've reported. We've been at conferences. We've been at workshops. We've been at meetings. I cannot explain why. But this is about how we take part. Yes, again, we think it's a question of both parties to make an effort to get together, to meet, to plan, to coordinate. We are definitely ready to do that.
I can add and say that it varies from province to province. Some provinces have provincial health councils and district health councils that are functioning, and we are invited both at the provincial level and the district level. Mpumalanga, for example, we are in all the MPAC. Provincial Health Council, in Ngomazi, in the district, they are very active in those districts. But in other provinces, other districts, the councils are not, you know, as such functioning. They are not constant. They might be on and off. Like Lona was saying, we have been an active member of the Nerve Center at National for the whole period of the ICT campaign. And we do participate and provide, you know, our experience and what you know, the capacity we have. In the last 2 years, we have also had a campaign where we have presented to different institutions in the provinces where we are not working. We have been to Northwest. We have presented to the Northwest Provincial Council of Religious and Health. We have met I think it's a forum of the head of departments in the Northwest. We've been to and they actually sent a delegation to Gauteng to come and hear more about the program in Northwest. We've been to Free State. We have presented to the MEC, to the HOD. So we have been to many of the provinces where we are not working. Northwestern Cape and Northern Cape have not been to this part. And then I think maybe this of presence that we also feel. I think part of it is also because South Africa is huge. In Gauteng, for example, we were in the West Rand with 150 field officers. And you know, your visibility, even with 150 field officers, you are not very visible. Even though we write a report and send to, you know, Department of Health and the different people, still you are not as visible as you would really want to. In smaller populations, in Namibia and in Botswana, where we are covering half the population, I mean, nearly everybody knows about TCE and the program and so on. So that could be the explanation. And maybe when we say we are, I'm just thinking in the future when I get this question, that maybe it's good we specify that we are in this district. Because if you say you're in Gauteng or you're in Mpumalanga, and yet you're in one small corner of Mpumalanga, people think you're in the whole province. And then the next question was on moral degeneration and how do you deal with that? I think for me what is unique, and I would want to emphasize that it's not in any other NGO. We have got this, that I said, we've got what we call a perpendicular expert system. Unfortunately, I didn't bring a card. It's a card that we have. It has got 7 to 10 demands. And it's 7 to 10 demands to the person. The person who has been registered in this house of register for the 2,000 that the field officer has, they get that PES card. And that PES card, they make their own individual plan. For me, that's the new component that is in the program that you don't find anywhere else, where you have to sit with the individual and find out. So, the target population as an individual, it means each lesson, each presentation, each discussion is tailor-made to the individual. It's not general. And for me, that is exactly what has been lacking this far. That presentations are general. I don't come and talk to you and gain your confidence. And it doesn't happen. If I start to discuss with you, it doesn't happen. I mean, assuming no one has got a boyfriend somewhere and she thinks, maybe it's embarrassing for me to say I've got a boyfriend or whatever, or two boyfriends or whatever. She will not say to me as a field officer at the first visit. But when she starts to gain confidence in the way I'm provoking it, that's when she opens up. So for me, it's going beyond. It's good with the radio program, good with the rallies, good with where people can be addressed in groups. But it doesn't address the question that we have now, where the person who is getting infected today, right now, when we speak in South Africa, is not the person who doesn't know about HIV and AIDS. It's the person who knows everything. But there's still some components that are not there. That, in my opinion, can only be addressed if you get a field officer who is able to gain the confidence. And even among the field officers we have, it's not all who have got that level of capacity where the person will open up to the field officer and say, hey, my friend, this is the situation I'm in. Let's discuss it. And then start to take steps. And that's where we are lacking, in my opinion. How do we provoke people enough to realize, cannot trust?
That's a minute. Yeah. I think these two questions are combined with the questions that came, which was talking about the lack of dignity because I don't have money, because of poverty. I think they are combined with this one. That do you think you are able to change the culture thinking of a person when you sit with that person alone? if I believe that I'm a man in this house, and if I want sex without a condom, it's my culture to do it without a condom, and the female cannot tell me anything. And it goes with the other question that, because my wife doesn't have money, I'm the only one who's working. And she, for her to survive, she knows that she's got to abide whatever that I say. And that is the question that is being asked. Can you make that person who doesn't have money to have the guts of saying to the husband that, even if you're not going to give me your money after, I'm not going to allow you to have sex with me without a condom? Are you able to change that situation?
I would say yes. And I'll explain why I would say yes. I think part of the challenge that we have with HIV and AIDS is also historical. And I'll try to explain why. You know, I worked as a project leader for the whole program in Namibia in the early when the virus was discovered. And I think part of the stigma that came from that, we still have the challenge now. You know, the HCT campaign that we had in South Africa last year, that's what we were supposed to have 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, in my opinion. Because when you go and test, regardless of whatever culture, if a person goes and tests, they test negative, they get good counseling, they will change. It's them to interrogate their own culture, because it's pointed out that, look, my friend, if you do like this, this is how it spreads. And for us, that's also where the training is coming in with the field doctors. Of course, the field doctors are coming from the community, and in our discussions, we also identify some of those cultures, so that when the field doctors go and discuss with people, they are making reference to those cultures. You know, it's a very fun example. I'll just say it. In Mozambique, they've got this this culture where when a brother dies, then the other brother is the one who claims him. And now, because of it, we sleep with the wife, to cleanse, so that then she can be free to continue then the account. And then, because of the mobilization, you know, a new phenomenon came in that then the families no longer, the brothers don't want to go and clean. Yeah? So a new aspect came within the culture where there were some people who for money, but it's not culture now, who for money were being hired to go and clean. So in the community, I identified, and I would assume probably somebody who is positive and was not counseled properly, so they would hire the person to say, okay, here we have had a funeral, my brother has passed away, can you come and clean my in-law? But the point I'm making is that they moved from their culture. The brother who was supposed to do it is standing up and saying, not me, because they have understood. And of course, a new problem is coming up now, is that they are hiring somebody else to come and do it for them. But for me, it's sure time that when it's properly addressed and the culture is addressed, and we also have it in TC, we have what we call opinion forming meetings. When field officers go and speak these things, we call an opinion forming meeting with local leaders and say, these are the cultural issues. And it's not to impose, these are the cultural issues that we think are having a problem and impact on this. How do we deal with this? So that also the local leaders are involved in the whole process. But for me, I think the entry point is the testing. And I think in the early 80s, we should have tested people even under trees.
I think we need to work to some of the more concrete questions. I mean, this about can we change or not change, I mean, we could sit and discuss the whole day. It's because, well, I also see we don't have an option. We have to believe that people can change. And we can see that people have changed. There might also be people who have not changed, but you can, of course, can people change. If they see that they have to change, they can change. But it takes a lot of convincing and persuasion and discussions and information and education and passion. That's what it takes. Okay, but let's move to some of the more concrete questions. There was a question, how do we see ourselves in the re-engineering? That's exactly our challenge. What we are now, the KwaZulu-Natal government is here, and there what we are planning to do here, and we hope to engage, is that we are actually going to work with the government community health workers. So where we come in is that extra force to make the community health workers do their utmost in achieving those targets. That's why we said in the beginning, we think it takes a lot to keep those community health workers moving. So what we envision as, we can call it technical support, we call it mobilization, is to come in and actually provide that leadership to the community health workers. And then, of course, very work with the clinics and work with the government in that endeavor. But the strength is definitely in the leadership of the community health workers. Then there was a question about stipends. We have gotten most of our funding from Global Fund and USAID, and so it has been part of the budget, where the stipends for the field officers have been paid from that budget. What we see in the transition to working more with government is to say, okay, we can come in and work with government community health workers who are actually paid from government as community health workers. And then, of course, yeah, so then the stipends obviously would come from government. But until now, they have come from our donation. There was another question. Do we get funding from government? Yes, we have received funding from government in some cases. When we started the very first TCE area in Partizaville, Soweto, it was actually on the initiative of Department of Health. We got some other donors on board. We have gotten a donation from government in Limpopo also to start TCE in the Limpopo province. And we have gotten government funding from two district municipalities in Buklavala, in Pumalanga, and in Amatole in Eastern Cape.
Because of time. Some of the questions that you think are important to explain, you can send them to the secretary for the portfolio committee. Yeah. Okay. You can just close. You can just have your close.
Yes, but I hope that our presentations and the discussions have clarified some questions. I mean, we are definitely very interested in see how we can work together and how we also can get some support from your side. I can see that there are many things we cannot just finalize today in our discussions. But we also see this as an ongoing thing. It's not like something is right and something is wrong. I mean, it's a daily work where you learn something and you do something different the next day. So we hope that we have been able to bring some light upon our work and that we can find a way to work together. Thank you very much.
I don't think you've got to be worried about that. One thing that I used to know when I was a student is that when you go for an oral question, if you have done well, you get the more difficult question. If you have done badly, then there are very few questions that come to you. So this is what you must understand, that the fact that there's a lot of questions that were coming to you is because the members know that this is good and this is what needs to be done in South Africa. It's only that there are certain things that you need to look into. So thank you for your presentation, for your good presentation. The only talent that probably you might not be aware of, there's a quasi-federal system in South Africa, or a pseudo-federal system, especially in health education, where you find that there's a national department that makes policies and strategies, and then the implementation is actually done in provinces. Now, we are here in the national parliament. Now, we don't know exactly what's happening in the provinces, and the people that we are working with are actually in the provinces, specifically the regions in those areas. So there must seem as if there's no coordination, no integration, but this is what you need to understand. And one would actually suggest in our recommendations that probably you need to talk to the National Department of Health too, because we think that primary health care is one area that in the 17 years we have not done well, and we need to re-engineer that primary health care. So probably we will suggest to the head of department nationally that they must meet you so that you could work together. But it's so important that when you do this, you must be prepared that you could be integrated with others, and the interest should not be the financial gains that you're going to get, but it should be better with the life of the people of South Africa. And that's what would be. Thank you very much. Members, we've got the KZN is already here. But I think because they've been traveling, and I know there are very few planes that go to KZN, maybe Zala, you know that the planes that go to KZN are very few. So they must be tired. I'm not sure whether they went by Joburg. One time SAA was not going to KZN. So let's give them time to have tea for 5 minutes and then we can start. I'm not sure whether they will. Let's just have tea for 5 minutes and then we restart with KZN. You are free to say Humana people if you want to, but if you want to go, you can go. Albert to the hospital. And she was saying, it's so good, the attitude is so well. And subsequent to that, I saw it on ETV that Chief Albert to the hospital is one of the best hospitals. I think that is very good, KZN. And we want you to keep it up. That's good way. The other one that I think is good that has happened in your province, we were told by Treasury, but maybe you'll have to answer a question that, and you see, we were told by Treasury that you had an overdraft which was going to billions, if I remember well. And Treasury was telling us that he has managed to turn it around, which is a very good thing. I think we want to commend you for doing that type of job. But the question that comes is, when you have managed to turn it around, did it not affect your services in trying to turn it around? Because Treasury might be looking at the figures, but we don't know what impact is that turning it around. It's good that you turn it around, but didn't affect your services, your healthcare services in the province. The last one, I think a few of us, I think these are the four of us, we were in Gauteng, and it was, I'm not sure whether it was a workshop or a conference for rural, it was a summit, rural summit, and there was a presentation from one of your districts, Umzinyathi. I think Umzinyathi district is where you started having EMDR and partly FDR. And the person who presented there, who did it very well, she told us how things were before, and she told us how things are now. And in fact, by the look of things, it's one of the districts that are doing very well in the country, not in KZN, but in the country. And I think you need to keep up that good work. We're not sure whether you know about that, but they are very good on nurses. If I was the MEC, I would promote that nurse who made that presentation. She was very good, and she knows what she's talking about. In fact, they were even telling us how they get to rural areas. I don't want to stress the she part of it, because I think there are some people that said we must be led by female. I'm not sure whether, in any case, the chief now were females. Maybe things will change. I don't know what you say, MEC, whether we should be led by females. No, let's not discuss that. But I think we're very impressed. I was very impressed with that presentation. And I'm hoping that the other districts are going to take note of what happened at Umzinyathi. I'm hoping that I'm mentioning it right, but I think it's around Umzinga. It's around Umzinga, it's well known for Ulwa. There's usually a lot of fighting around December, but they're not fighting now. They've turned around things, and it's quite good. So I think those are some of the good things that have happened. Now, we'll give over to you to present, but before we do that, maybe you need to know the numbers. I think you know only one person here. You know Umar Mumsele. Because you get into one plane. Okay, so we'll let other members tell you who they are. We'll start with Umar Sekhwale at the time. Every young female who always wants us to
recognize you. Yes. My name is Morusi Sekhwale. I'm a member of this committee from Northwest province. Okay, thank you. I'm Emma Moore, member of this committee from Gauteng.
Thank you, good morning. I am Sandra Kenny, member of this committee from Eastern Cape.
Good morning, my name is Hanif Hussain, I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, I'm Mark Waters, also a member of the committee.
Hanif, did you say this from KZN too? We want to ask you difficult questions later on. Okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and all the members of the committee.
delighted about the comments that you have made, positive ones also, and you have made us very comfortable to say we are not the only ones who were invited, but other colleagues have since apologized. We have a presentation, but you see, when these things are presented by a politician, we prefer to just talk through, but you leave it behind because you are, as Honourable Chair said, you may reflect on it when you are actually taking the processes forward. But my HODA is going to answer all the difficult questions. That is the main purpose why she joined me. Dr. Sibongiseni Dhlomo, she's Dr. Sibongile Zungu. We get mixed up sometimes. Both our names are SS. And there's a support staff from our office, Uzama, with us. Honourable Chairperson and members, we did not know how the meeting was, our office was going to go, but nevertheless, the Chairperson has briefed me as to actually what needs to be done. What we indicate up front to the Honourable members that the matter that is between and the National Health Services has already been sent to the Intergovernmental Relations process, that is, the Premier is actually very much interested in this process, and therefore he is aware also that we are making this presentation to the National, Portfolio Committee in the National Assembly. It has then, through the Premier, gone into the Executive Council of KwaZulu-Natal to discuss this matter further. And thank you very much for inviting us, because when I told the Minister that we are invited here, and I think of not coming because of other commitments, the Minister actually advised me to prioritize coming here, because he also knows how important this matter is, so it is also known to him. Now, yesterday we had our routine meeting with the KZN Legislator Portfolio Committee of Health. We informed them that we have been invited here, and they also fully endorse and support the stance that we already have taken to date. And yesterday I was phoned by the Director General, Ms. Precious Matsoso, and she wanted to indicate that maybe it would be important to mention to this committee that you probably may find, if you do find in your busy schedule a slot to invite the National Department of Health, that would make a global presentation here, because the matter is at a level where now the National Department of Health has actually been having continuous meeting with the Accountant General, among other things, because of certain issues that have been picked up, not necessarily only in KwaZulu-Natal, but in other provinces, with regards to the billing system and the way this matter has gone. So I'm not privy to be able to give details of that part, because it's something that is still sitting at the national office, but it's something that is actually worrying even the National Department of Health. Maybe to reflect, probably it would have been the job of the National Health Laboratory Services to indicate why in the first place there was an indication in the country that we must have this structure. Probably one could actually glean that there might have been a thought of an efficiency and cost effectiveness on terms of the process. But Honourable Chairperson and members, I might as well reflect right up front to say, to give you a scenario, present in the country, and we now look back and say the minister did well. We actually were called upon by provinces to come into a national tender for ARVs. And that has yielded to date a cost, we have cut down costs by 4 billion. On the same number of patients in the country, we have actually been able to reduce costs through bringing all provinces together and be able to even put a tender that we could get ARVs wherever, whichever part of the world cheaper. We were then able to reduce our cost on the ARVs that are in the country by 4 billion, from 8 to 4 billion. Now, the information also that probably might be known to the honourable members, that 25% of the ARVs that are consumed in the world are in South Africa. So we are doing that well. Of course, our good work is not good enough, but probably it shows that we are probably taking care of a lot of our members who are unwell, but again, the burden is heavier here. We might as well have to submit to these members, honourable members, that a third of the patients that are on ARVs in the country are in KwaZulu-Natal. That means over just of that 1.5 million South Africans are on ARVs, just over 500,000 are in KwaZulu-Natal. And therefore, I'm raising this part, honourable chairperson, because from your background as a health worker, a lot of these issues of Airbnb go with a lot of investigation. So I'm actually submitting that we are probably doing more investigations that need laboratories than any part of the country, and therefore we'll be the ones who are very circumspect about how our spending on that. Now, probably what also is important is why was KZN in 2000 left behind? As I indicated, our premier, who was at that time an MEC, probably made so much strong submissions that this Health Act in 2000, when it actually brought this issue of National Health Support Services, in 2000, in the year 2000, it was that, look, it is actually signed in Cape Town in Parliament, excluding KwaZulu-Natal because of the submissions that were presented there. However, National Development was tasked that within 5 years, please get this issue discussed, sorted out, so that we can actually see a uniform pattern. We look back and say there were no rigorous discussions that actually went into put out a plan that would actually deal with those concerns, and not putting a blame on anyone, but the milestones that were tabled there really could not have been reached, were not reached. What then was found that in 2006 and 2004, not that things fit with a particular person, but at that time, unfortunately for our province, the MEC then was now a premier, moved to another department, and also the head of department moved out of the department. So it then brought the new leadership, and nevertheless, there was a signing of this interim agreement, which was binding on a particular scenario, which says, KwaZulu-Natal, you come in on a flat fee with the services that you are going to be dealing with. Because there was an expectation from the department also that they would do certain things, among other things that we still have, we are honoring them to date, which probably might actually speak to. That contract, therefore, was to end in 2008. In 2008, a new interim was put in place again because nothing had been achieved, and that new interim was speaking into the flag free again. Now, what seems to have happened, Honorable Chairperson and members, is that in 2010, April, the NHLS unilaterally switched off and made us to pay what they call a fee for service, which now is quite as many as into this one. We want to send indicate to the Honourable Member that we are still continuing paying NHLS to date, and we are up to date in terms of the flat fee arrangement, coupled with the flat fee that we are paying. We are to say NHLS must be all over our hospitals, using our own buildings and every facility, and therefore we will be silent in terms of utilities and all the other issues, because we are actually in a very difficult arrangement. We have not actually done anything to that. They're still sitting in all our buildings, and they're still using all their facilities the way they were using them in 2006. And so that part of the deal we've honored. But they, on their own, literally have switched over and have moved on to a fee for service. Honorable Chairperson, I want to actually submit to this House that we don't think it was the right idea anyway to start with this process. And it should not have been there on the first place. We have lost certain innovations in the province, and it is actually translating itself into TB. Etekwini district, as the members behind us, is the highest ever district with a TB in the country and in the world. They are saying in the world, WHO is saying, if we have 200 new infections per 100,000 of a population, they consider that to be an epidemic. In KwaZulu-Natal, in the province of Durban, with 1,400 new infections, which means it's 7 times the pandemic of what WHO is explaining. Now, we are specialized to say, you guys are sitting there. Now, one of the innovations we lost within NHLS, you remove the power of making a decision to hire a grade, it's a 12th person, and teach that person one and one only thing to just be a microscope. Cross-copist, to say, you shall get this P-time sitting far away in Konjeni, sitting far away in Kofo, and look at this P-time, and when you see this thing, you'll be seeing TB, and this patient today will be started on treatment for TB. The turnaround time is now 2 weeks, it's gone.
leave this genetic peg that is just coming out to be a savior, but you can't even have it all over. By the microscopists were people who did not have high skin training. All they were taught that you look, you recognize this thing, this is TB, start the treatment there and there, and therefore we were able to contain TB. And number two, you do not have a time to take specimens from Konjeni, get them to go to Uganda, get one truck to come and collect, take them there to Devon. And by the time, because the specimens have spilled over, this letter doesn't happen, because they take them to the central laboratory sitting maybe at Zimbabwe, all those things, and the turnaround time, patients will be dying, they are not getting results coming back. Now, it has actually pushed up the cost. One other interesting thing that the minister might have probably informed the honorable member is that all other specialists in the country are trained in using subsidy from the Department of Higher Education. But for microbiologists, for pathologists who are part of this team, they are getting trained for the resources that are. So it means, first and foremost, NHLS will start by saying, how many people want to have as laboratory, as a pathologist? They say, so many we want to train. As microbiologists, so many. What will it cost so much? Therefore, working backwards, how much then do you charge for doing this preterm examination so that you can get all this filled out? But that money should not be coming in there into that equation. We think and we feel that we are glad Mzinyati is doing pretty well as a HOT might answer. But yes, we think maybe the epicenter of the disease was not that going to teach us many things and probably be able to turn around the corner. But yes, the MDR, XDR outbreak, very much related to us losing the battle in terms of having a very strong focus on TB and malaria and many other things. So we think we have there are some options here. One, somebody must immediately and urgently revise this NHLS Act. That's important. But before that is revised, somebody might be saying, what are the things going forward that must even come out immediately? And I'm glad to hear from the minister that NHLS is willing and they are available to even say, yes, it was wrong even to have the training of the specialists being part of, they must get that money elsewhere. Number two, the fee for service that is being envisaged has a lot of challenges. Not only for Kwazulu-Natal, we don't go into that as yet, for other provinces. And what the Director General is saying, the report that she has with the Accountant General talks to them. So, honourable members, we just want to indicate that with all the structures and the bodies that we report to and work with, we have been greatly supported to say, let's stick on this fee for service, because they are also sticking to the things that you agreed upon. Say, you use our facilities, amenities, you stay like that, we don't bill you as much as we don't bill up anything different from what was the initial agreement. Until that has been resolved going forward, we think we're in the right track of not really paying more than that, because to date we have to pay them 820 million. Now, if then we have to do that, we could probably do that, go borrow back or steal money and get to pay. But if this process is left unattended, it is the very same thing that as putting NHI is again addressing, because we are not hitting the wall right now in terms of healthcare services delivery in the country. But the NHI, if it doesn't kick in now, I don't know where we are going to be in 10 years. Again, if we do not attend to NHLS right now, we're not going to survive. We just don't have any, we will not have any money to do any other thing except to pay the laboratory services. And I have a premier who at that time, when the MEC stuck to his guard and said, I was not going to do this, and he actually is advising us, saying, get to discuss this very strongly. He feels very strong about it, that he thinks he must go back to, he's a chairperson of the ruling party in terms of health and education. He feels that very strongly about it, that he would really prefer to take it there if he can't find its space within governance structures to have it resolved. So we were not going to come, honorable chairperson, to say, yes, NHLS, we agree with them, we are going to pay. We just don't have $100 million to be paying for. And we are so circumspect about it, because if you can check other provinces that are continuously paying, have already have picked up certain irregularities that are now sitting with the Accountant General and the Director General. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members, and all the difficult questions will be asked by my HOT, answered by him.
Thank you very much. in any case, he's the chief, so he knows how to answer questions. Now, members, as we said, the reason why we called them, we were told that they are owing more than 800 million to NHLS. And NHLS was very worried about the fact that they'll have to close shop if they're not getting the money. It's not only KZN, but I think KZN is the biggest amount. So the impression that we have, or in fact the question that basically one was asking, is KZN aware that if you get a service, you must pay for it? It doesn't come free. So why are they letting NHS to die? Saying that, knowing that they've just turned around something that was very big, those billions there, they've turned them around. Now they've got this amount that they're not paying. But what I'm getting from UMEC is that there was a certain agreement which they're honoring now, but things changed in another way. And I think one thing that is always worrying is that NHLS is run as a business. Now, it becomes very difficult running a business but not having good control in what you're doing, because you end up making the poor people suffer. I'm saying this where this is the question that was asked by the answer. You know, there's something that they do at NHLS, or it is done in hospitals, where you just write, as a doctor, I want SBC, and the blood is taken. In that SBC, if you write SBC, there are about 12 things that are done there. You take the white cell count, you take the red blood cell count, you take the platelets, you take the hematocrit, you check the FCV. There's about 12 things that are done. Yet, the doctor is just only looking for the hemoglobin of the patient. And they do all that, and they charge it to the department. And in fact, I asked the CEO last time they were here, do you have control on this? And he said, there's still something that they are looking into, where they would control that. If you write SBC, you must be specific of what you want so that you could charge. So the point that I'm trying to bring here is that now we're getting some other story. It's a pity that we called, we were supposed to call NHLS. But unfortunately, it's not them, it's us who bunched up things, and they are not here, because we're not supposed to talk about them without them. But I know they're going to be coming on the 26th of the night. They're coming on the 9th. But members, that is the situation. The department has said what they wanted to say. And the other part that is important, which has been suggested, which I would request members that we do it, is to call the national department so that they can explain certain things that they know, especially the suggestion from the HOD that we should call them. But let me open it up for you members to ask questions or deliberate on what has been said.
Thank you. Listening to the MEC, I would understand, and I should be corrected if my understanding is not correct, that there was an agreement. He didn't talk about their housing, the NHLS. I would like to know that. Is there a memorandum of understanding, and if it is there, I would like to see. And another thing which really makes us worry, it was if the NHLS can say that they can no more do some investigation, some business investigation in KwaZulu-Natal, because they are not being paid, they are being owed as they are here. Have the department ever thought of that? And if we come to this bridge, how will we cross it? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. But by the way, I think there's something, I'm just adding, matter of fact, there's something that MEC mentioned, that the law which was enacted, that the department should use NHLS. They were not part of that, it became very clear. And it was at a certain stage where they signed that memorandum. But even that one had a time frame, because KZN was not part of that. And it came later. So I just wanted to add that part, that it came later. And in fact, even when it came later, if I understand where MEC went, he said it was not going to be a fee for service. It was going to be a flat rate, which he says they continued doing it, that part, about to date. But their worry is that it quickly changed to fee for service, which they don't understand where it came from. Okay. Mama Kenya, and then
I think my first question was the answer from Sam. And my second one is that the chef and the government is saying that the NHLS is using the administrative system. Is there any contact time or maybe that time?
So this is a bit of a difficult situation to be in. You feel like you're sitting here in a civil court trying to listen to who's right and who's wrong. And I just wonder, is the situation that bad that the provincial department and the NHLS cannot sit in one room and fix this thing up and sort it out one way or another? Instead of, I mean, I understand that we invited the provincial department here as a result of the comments that was made by the NHLS in the previous presentation. But I actually wonder whether it's necessary for us to intervene in something that should be sorted out between the two administrations. So that's just the one comment. The second point, and perhaps a question to the MEC, is that when NHLS was here on the previous occasion, the gentleman whose name I cannot remember now, confirmed that there isn't a system where you track an individual patient. Perhaps maybe let me explain it like this. When the doctor send a specimen for testing, it's accompanied with a person's name. And there's a very strong likelihood that that one person is testing more than one time in different clinics. And the department is paying more than one time for those tests. Because there's the absence of a central patient registry, you are unable to track that Mr. A has tested in clinic A, and this is the same Mr. A who is now trying to test via clinic C. And so the very real possibility exists that there are patients who are double and triple testing, and the department is double and triple paying. The question that I ask is that, do you have any plans in place to try and implement such a central patient registry so you can minimize that duplication of payments and save yourself a hell of a lot of money? Thank you, Chair.
Maybe just might be going to be the last one, but if I could just say this, I think the laws are made here by us, and I think probably it was good that we called them so that they could make us aware that probably the law that we enacted has got flaws in it. And I think and he has actually made that categorically that we need to amend certain parts in the law. Then it's up to us whether we agree or we don't agree. But this is one of the top levels. And I suspect there has been talks between them and NHLS which have not borne any fruit. That's why I thought they thought the highest structure in the land, which is Parliament, they very felt very happy that we should go to that higher structure. But it's up to us to say we agree with that, we need to amend the law because they are forced by the law. And in fact, what is that? He mentioned something about innovation. That if you are using one company, you can be overcharged and you can't do anything because it's a law. On the other side, you can't have innovation from outside because you've already got this person who's saying, you are supposed to use me by law. And I think that's a strange thing, but I agree with you.
Thank you, Chair. And just a few questions to NEC. Just clarity, how much does the province currently owe the NHLS at the moment? And then you mentioned, if my notes are correct, that in April 2010, they changed the payment structure to fee service, and that's what led to charges increasing and you unable to pay for those services. I mean, but since 2010, have you applied for additional funding during the NDF period, which was in October 2010, and then also this current budget, which started in April? Did you not apply for additional funding, knowing that it was not fee for service? And if you haven't, can you just explain why not? And then also, Chair, I find it strange. I'll wait for the chair to finish. I just think, Chair, I find it strange that other provinces, I understand that KZN is the biggest number of HIV positive people in the country on ARVs, and that has its own burden. But, you know, provinces like the Free State, for example, are up to date with the payment to NHLS. And it just seems to me there's bad management in KZN, particularly around the finances and allocation of finances and paying of bills. That's the impression I get.
Thank you, McNaught. The reason why I seem to be listening to Vivas is only because they had invited other provinces. One of them was Gauteng, the other one was Eastern Cape. But unfortunately, they apologized for other reasons. But she was telling me that the person that she was talking to actually said they would have liked to be here to further confirm that NHLS is overcharging them. That's what she was saying. She was telling me that even the other provinces, including Eastern Cape, by saying the same thing that is being said by KZN. Okay, that was the last hand that I saw. If there's no other hand, then let's give over to KZN to answer. Okay, Mazu.
Thank you, Chen. I don't know whether I would be proper to also deal with some of the questions that the chairperson had raised in the first phase before the NDP presented. Thank you. One of the issues that was raised was around the turnaround in health and whether the savings that were made did not affect the services. And actually, the turnaround was twofold, or the underspending that happened in KZN subsequently. It was twofold. One was the pure underspending in terms of conditional grants around infrastructure, where the hospital revitalization grant was underspent by about 393 million. And the other was an area where there were payments that were not yet made due to late deliveries and so on. And we have about 900 million that was already committed that was not paid because of the late deliveries. And also we have an amount of the remaining amount that will make around 100-something million would be then the pure savings where, due to the austerity measures that were set up, that we made those savings. And the issues around the Umzinyathi district, there is a lot of good work that is being done around the Uzinyathi district, but also the location of the district within the province does favor that district for good work. The practices of the people of that community, they keep the community in a way intact, because it is not affected by the neighborhoods, the N3 and the N2. And in our province, this is the only district that has got an antenatal prevalence of HIV that is less than 30%. All the others are above the 34, 35, and the 6 of the districts in the country that have an HIV prevalence above 40% are in KwaZulu-Natal, and they are all along the N2 and 3 route. And this province is in the middle, and there is no major route that goes through it, no major industries, no major activities. It's just a community that is protected there. However, due to the changes that we had in the running of the health system, we did get this outbreak of SDR-MDR, but using community-based services, we were able to then, in the end, treat patients with MDR at community level using outreach teams. And in terms of Inkosi Albert Luthuli Central Hospital, it is quite an impressive hospital. It is a public-private partnership. And because it's a public-private partnership, when the NHLS Act came into effect in December 2000, there was a provision that whatever it was that was there in provinces that was used for laboratory services in terms of the infrastructure, all that would then be transferred to NHLS. In the case of Inkosi Albert Luthuli Central Hospital, we have a whole block that was then transferred to NHLS. But under the PPP, we have an arrangement for equipment refurbishment every 5 years. We have services that are contracted out to the private partner, to the consortium, where cleaning is done by the consortium, security, and so on. It's all done, and maintenance is done by the consortium. So the Department of Health in KwaZulu-Natal pays the consortium the whole fee for management of services that are non-clinical throughout the hospital, including the area that is utilized by NHLS, for refurbishment of equipment, including the equipment for the laboratory, and there is no fee that is then demanded from NHLS. So the statement that we are putting forward to say that we are not recovering any expenses, any costs from NHLS for the utilization of our facilities, nor are we claiming anything around utilities. And in the service level agreement that we have, answering the question whether we do have an agreement, yes, we have an agreement. And that agreement expired in 2008, and then we extended it to 2010 under the payment of the flat rate, with an understanding that we will continue with the flat rate, and they will continue utilizing our services and will absorb the cost for their utilities. And then going forward, then there is no new agreement that we have, because the two parties have not agreed on the fee for service, and we have maintained that we will then continue paying on a flat rate, and we are not charging for the utilities. We have kept the side of the agreement, even though there isn't a formal signed agreement that extends from the period April 2010 to date. And then on the issues that relate to alternative services, we read in the media that NHLS is looking at options to cut out KZN because of non-payment. And we then went around to look at the cost of providing laboratory services in the private sector, and we compared those to the cost of NHLS. And on average, we found that NHLS costs were around 20% less than the private sector if we are looking at the cash-paying patients, because the costs are different for medical aid patients. They are a bit cheaper when you are looking at cash-paying private patients and the medical aid patients. For some reason, there's a difference. The medical aid patients pay more, and the cash-paying patients pay a bit less. And we looked at about 27 common tests that are done, and we found that on average, NHLS costs were cheaper, and the private sector costs were then much higher, even though occasionally some of the costs were higher on the side of NHLS. But then we took a closer look at these costs, and we could identify hidden costs where NHLS actually does not carry the cost. The cost is carried by the department. For instance, if we look at phlebotomies, the people that draw the blood from the patient, in a private laboratory, you would find a phlebotomist that is employed by a private lab, whereas in a health facility, the nurses, the doctors will draw the blood, and there is no additional payment. So NHLS gets a specimen. That specimen would be in a test tube, which is also paid for by the state. It's not a test tube that is paid for by the lab. In a private lab, you'll be provided with a test tube. There will be phlebotomists that will draw the blood before you get a specimen to be tested. And we also then looked at the fact that the reporting of the results. In a private lab, you'll find a pathologist that reports on the results. But in our case, in the public sector, we get the results, and then the health professionals interpret the results for themselves in most instances. So in that way, if you were to do then what we call actual costing and include all these other areas that are left out in the charge from NHLS, actually then you lose out on the saving that or at face value you see when you look at the cost in that manner. And then when we look at alternative service providers, if NHLS opts out, even though we have not taken a real serious look at that, but we have seen that it would not be a very difficult thing to do, because we have looked at the major centers around the province, and we found that there are private laboratories that exist in all those major centers. Depending on how we look at alternative service provision, whether we look at internal service provision and testing at point of care, because like the chairperson was indicating, there are a lot of machines that would assist to test for certain blood tests next to the patient without sending the results to the lab, and the health professional can interpret for himself or for herself. And then in terms of whether the situation is that bad between the two departments or the two organs of state, well, we do talk to NHLS, and we do meet, and we have also met at the National Department of Health. They have presented this matter to the National Health Council, where we presented. I think the difficulty comes when we present our position as a department, where we put the facts that cannot be disputed. And the issue is, NHLS expects payment, and the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Health is not prepared to make the payment, as long as the areas that we have mentioned are not dealt with. Because at no point did we agree as a department to go for a fee for service. And we did have an agreement that was allowing us to continue the working in a cost recovery mode. And that is the situation that we had throughout the country. And KwaZulu-Natal had not agreed in the first instance to move to the NHLS due to a number of areas that had been mentioned that were giving efficiencies to the province, such that the analysis that was done by the province has shown that the cost for provision of laboratory services went up immediately after going into NHLS, even though we're at a flat rate at the time. And when we project, looking at the fee-for-service, that even goes much higher than where we were at the moment. And a province like KwaZulu-Natal might not then be able to sustain the costs that are related to NHLS. And also, in terms of the efficiencies and the turnaround time for provision of laboratory services, it actually remains difficult because of the topography of the province and the fact that some of the innovations that were mentioned by the NEC have actually died out, where there were a lot of tests that could be done at a local level with the training of mid-level worker type of people that could do the work at that point, and that has actually disappeared. In terms of a system where we can monitor movement of patients between health facilities, at this point we do not have a single system in the province that can monitor the movement of patients. However, if we were to then look at the cost and look at the cost and presume that that could be a new phenomenon that has come in. But even when we were dealing with the services in-house, when we were doing laboratory services in-house as a department, the patients could have moved around. So we can assume that the movement of patients would have happened prior to NHLS and even after NHLS, and then we can discuss the factor to say that probably the issue of the movement of patients is something that we have to work on to see that we don't have a double dipping in terms of the testing and also in terms of treatment, because the cost could reflect also in pharmaceuticals and other areas where patients would move around without being noticed. But to answer the issue of a system, we do not have such a system in the province. There are hospitals that can monitor patients that come in and repeat and so on, but very few hospitals in the province have an electronic patient monitoring system. And in terms of how much do we owe NHLS, as of the 30th of September, we were owing, according to NHLS, 839 million. And that was the amount then. And even though we are saying we do not owe NHLS because we pay regularly. And then the fee for service versus cost recovery, whether we have applied for additional funding, we haven't applied for additional funding. All we have done, we have flagged the NHLS amount of 800 million, and we estimated it to the end of the financial year that if it's counted along the cost, along the fee for service, it could be about a billion. And then we have reported it to our treasury that this could be an area that would put us into a overspending if we were to be late to pay. So we put it as a liability without actually applying for additional funding, because we have this sense that we do not actually owe that amount. But if there is a case that goes to court and we were to lose the case, we might then be forced to pay that money. Because if we apply for additional funding and we don't lose the case, then we would have that money, and we'll have to then account for it under an underspent an amount. And then if we look at the other provinces and how they have fared on the payment of their bills, in the National Health Council, where these issues are discussed, we are aware that there are other provinces that have not paid their accounts up to date, and they have been requested to pay, and they have different reasons for non-payment. Others are not disputing their accounts per se, however, the funds are just not available, and the others have indicated that the accounts are not quite accurate, and in other instances, the provinces have some electronic systems that they are using for the payment of accounts, and therefore we have multiple reasons why the accounts are not up to date, but none of those provinces had been left out at the time that NFLS came in as a law, and only KZN was the province that was stipulated in the Act that the application of the Act would exclude that the province. So, Chairperson, these are my contributions to the questions, and I will present my agency to fill in the gaps if I have left them.
It's a matter of emphasis. Let's say that maybe, yes, this is the right platform when this matter should reside, because it has now gone to a national level. I mean, you could probably not be, it's not fair to leave personal members out of the picture. And the mere fact, again, that the National Department of Health saying maybe there is value, there is substance in what KZN is raising. That is why they are actually getting into this discussion again with the Accountant General. So, there is something that is probably there, and I find it valuable for members to be part of. I think Honorable Watson, it depends on how we look into the agreement. As far as we are concerned, we are up to date in terms of payment, but as far as NHS, they are not. Because they unilaterally changed the agreement. Now, you can't in any parties, in any partnership, decide to use this better than the other. On the other part, which maybe is a matter of emphasis, is the issue of the repeat test. I think the chairperson was looking into it very seriously. This is something that maybe we did not foresee going forward. Having been trained and having worked in a hospital, you are called upon if you are abusing resources for laboratory services, as they have indicated. And you would be called upon to say, but why did you ask for a test number 1, 7, and 20? Why number 1 could actually cover everything else? But when that comes into NHLS, they are more than happy to do 117, 20, and 200 because there's more money coming in their way, and that's not the way clinically you could have actually diagnosed the patient. So there was, we were vigorously called into account for asking 20 tests when only 2 could account. Now that is again over-servicing, which was saying there's no monitoring of that within government, within public sector. But NHLS is more than willing and happy to so many tests being done without coming in there and dealing with this. So the matter is that we want to say our part of the story is to say a flat fee, hence that is why we have not started billing them for utilities. They have changed it, but they still enjoy the benefits of being in that agreement that we have honored. So I think that is a misnomer from that part, and we think that we really would want to take the process in that way. Then.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, I was going to ask whether there are any other questions. Okay, members, all the 3.
Okay,
so the last 3.
I just want to inquire, it would be very interesting to understand how much is this service fee? I mean, for instance, the HOT said you owe them 8.9 million by September, and doctor, you're saying, according to your books, I mean, you don't owe them anything except this service fee from whenever it was introduced, which is 2010, April last year. So I just want to inquire, is it a percentage of something? I mean, how do they calculate this service fee before they give services?
Thanks, Mama. I think you've got the question. Eh?
Okay, Mama, can
thanks, Captain. I don't know whether I am using, I'm asking this question to the right people. Because my understanding is the NFL must answer. But I think the NFC can help us because he touched on the issue of his teacher examination. Now, I'm concerned because we are all looking at the target of goal number 6 in 2050, reduction of HIV/AIDS. That's why now I think I must also ask this question here, not to wait for anything else. My question is on the issue of teacher examination. that understand is also due to what is happening. Now, my question is that, are these people, we talked about that grade 12, what maybe, I didn't hear you correctly. That's what I said, do you think that most of them are trained lab technicians so that you can get the microprocessor sensitivity results that are correct? So as to care that part of this TV. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I always ask this question because it is a common practice whereby you find that the nurses, people who are taking blood, who are filling the forms, they will use incorrect forms, whereby you find they should be using forms which are used for grants. Now, I want to know from the department, is this problem rife in KwaZulu-Natal, whereby you find that instead of using the form for statements which will be paid by the grant, they use the form which it will be used in for equitable share. Do you have that problem? Thank you.
I think those are the questions. I think members, basically what one was trying to do is to see whether is it a question of mismanagement by KZN? Is it a question of them not having money? Or is it a question of not them understanding that you must pay for what you are doing? And I suspect most of these questions that we call them for have been answered. But let's allow them to answer the last few questions and then MEC, you'll just round up and then we'll close.
Thank you, Captain. In terms of the cost of the utilities, we have different costs, and we would need to sit and deal with the percentages according to the area that is utilized to be able to separate the bills. Because as a department, we get a single bill for electricity, for water in a facility, and then we will have to look at the area that is utilized by NHLS and then do the costing as a portion of the bill that we get. And those would refer to security and look at cleaning, look at water, electricity, and so on. And that is how we work out those services. The easier ones would pertain to Inkosi Albert, because the cost of refurbishment of equipment, we can just look at the equipment for laboratory services and pull that out. And then we can do the same for water and electricity, because the area they occupy is a block. There's just a whole block that is NHLS, and it's paid for under the contract. And in terms of the cost for the test, whether we use equitable share or we use the grant funding, when we do the test, when the forms are filled, it's the same forms, whether it's for grant or for equitable share. However, we then get funding from the grant, like from the HIV grant, that relates to management of HIV. And therefore, because we have the patients and we have them by name, we know the tests that we do to the patients on a periodic basis. Then we calculate those costs and build them on the grant. And then for equitable share, it's usually when we are
working the patient up before we know that the patient is an HIV positive patient and belongs to the grant, or it's a TB patient that is that where we need to get the cost from the grant. So what usually happens is that we do the calculation and the billing and the movement of funds afterwards, after we have actually correctly identified where the patients are coming from. This creates delays sometimes in the spending patterns of the grant, because we do the work and only afterwards go and then do the reconciliation of our information. And then when you look at the expenditure for the HIV grant, you might find that the expenditure is low, and on the equitable share we are showing an overspending, and later on we then reconcile and charge the activities on the correct funding source. And on the issue of the laboratory the microscopy, those are the people that initially have no training as laboratory technicians, but they get specific training. Like, key issues in KwaZulu-Natal are malaria and TB and HIV. So in terms of TB and malaria, these people come in either with a standard 8 or a grade 12. In the past, it used to be a standard 8 JC. And because they knew how to express themselves and they could read some pathology and so on, they would be then trained to do just one thing that is right in the area, like diagnosing malaria. So they could take a malaria smear and they would be taught how to do the diagnosis, and they would be taught by the actual lab technicians that have the qualification. And these people would work as assistants. And because they would be out there in the rural areas, there was a quality assurance program where there would be a technician, a lab technician that is qualified, that would be taking their specimen and checking them for quality assurance. It was an innovation that was there, and that we need to make sure that the service continues and the turnaround time is also improved.
May I have to expand on this last point? Is a very important thing. TB, malaria, HIV, very common in KwaZulu-Natal. Therefore, you don't need a very sophisticated army. You need a big army to deal with it. And therefore, you can't actually look for sophistication. If you can get a JC, a person to say, go and teach people how to use DDT, put a net and all that, you do so. And we saw rewards coming from there that you have to offer it. Now, to say, it's like saying everybody who uses transport might use the Porsche car. We said, no, it doesn't work like that. This is such a common problem of transport. Use any other vehicle, even if it means you use a horseback, so be it. So that was a strategy and a principle to say, we will use all means, including using the very basic lowly trained mid-level worker to actually deal with the problem. And we saw the results of coming into that. And we have just this last year lost it on malaria. On malaria was still very well. But we have lost it on TB, among other things, by losing that army of ordinary troops that can be there and deal with it. Leave the sophistication of laboratories, leave the sophistication of the highly trained skilled people. But remember for this opportunity in closing is to say, yes, some of the things that probably you would have wanted to know, and you did ask your person, how did we turn around some of the issues? There's issues related to having actually done a lot of investigation in the department. We were losing a lot of money. By the time we came in there, we were told that the supply chain management of the Department of Health was not done in the Tatars, and we have worked around that. We rather say we should not have people who are coming in with the sole purpose of squandering government money and actually work on that. We have worked on that very well, and that has really helped us along. Part of measures we have done is to say, can we begin to say we will have continuously meetings, planning meetings as a department, but in these government buildings, go and hire that hall, that school, that place that is cheaper than to go to hotels. If you're coming into Cape Town, let's wake up at 5 o'clock and take the LS flight and be here and go back same day. We don't need it for hotel to book and all. So now not just one person but the whole department of 67,000 people working in there. So that also has yielded some of these issues. But that's not the hand of her. It was a position that was taken by the whole province. So we made our own contributions in there towards that part. I just thought I should end with it. And thank you very much for affording us this opportunity. And I think you are an integral part, and you are the main and part of the core leadership that is actually going to be giving us direction going forward. Because if there was an amendment or the act on this matter, you are probably very central in driving that process. Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thank you very much, even for coming. You must know, MEC, that you, when you talk about Daisy, we've got young parliamentarians here who know Grace. Umemore know Grace, doesn't know Daisy and Form 5. He knows Grace well, but Grace 11. That's, you know. So we've got young politicians here. So thank you very much, KZN, for coming in. You know, we're not a dispute resolution group. We are parliament. But the thing is that people come to us and make some complaints. And some of the things we pick up that there's something that is not going on right. And as I said, that we're not sure whether you're mismanaging, whether you don't have money, or whether you want to kill NHLS. But the answers have actually come up. We definitely agree. I mean, from what we've got from UHLT, Dr. Zulu, he tells us that they have gone into detail in researching this problem. And I'm hoping that, in fact, it sounds like a very honest research, that NHLS looks as if they are cheaper. Yet if you look beyond that, they are very expensive. And the unfortunate part is that there's a law that makes you to work with them, whether you like it or not. And I think there's probably, we need to look at two processes here. As members of parliament, we need to go back and look at that law that was passed and see whether is it still right for today. And one knows that it takes one person to see something wrong, but it takes time for the others to follow and understand what was happening. I don't have to go to examples. So I think KZN has seen something that is not on. You might not be doing well in other things, but in this part, you have seen something and you have tried to research it and you come with information that this is the information that we have. So it's up to us to relook at that and see whether is it helping South Africa or is it not helping South Africa. But at the same time, I still think that from what Honorable Hussein was saying, probably we need to have another side of mediation, because NHLS still needs to continue working, and I don't think they need to take you to court. At the same time, there must be some understanding, because the law is not going to be done tomorrow and be finished and be changed. So it's something that needs to be looked into. So I'm hoping that that process is going to be going on, and we will make sure that we follow it up and monitor what goes on into that. We are a people-centered parliament, so people can come to us and complain, but we find ways of understanding. So thank you, Honorable Members. I think we've got to be meeting again with NHLS. If you happen to be not busy, then you can come, but we'll be calling other provinces so that we hear. But we think that they've been held by a gun on their necks, that, look, if you don't pay, we're not going to render the service. And they don't think they just do, which is what you didn't do. And we'll see what will happen when we call them. And at least NHLS will be here to answer for themselves in some of the things. But we don't want them not to continue working. And the last part is that we are going to call the National Department. We're meeting them next week. And this is on the agenda. We'll talk to them about this so that they can tell us what is actually happening. Thank you very much, members. Thank you very much, KZN. Thank you very much, Humana, people to people. So we'll be meeting tomorrow. Oh, Mike, you want to say something? No, not about this. Okay. But maybe let me mention this, that we're meeting again tomorrow, members. We'll be meeting the Auditor General's office. They'll be telling us what's happening yet, even after infrastructure. If you have something to eat, why don't you... We know KZN doesn't have money, so. Okay, Mark, you can.
Just want to find out what legislation is coming before the committee and when. Because you keep hearing rumors about the Office of Standards Compliance and other legislation. And then also, if you can just brief us on our overseas trip, what have you applied for, which countries are going to?
Let me say, okay, can we, because I was still trying to find from what the list that I've got was saying that who health and few other departments will go in January, February next year. But I thought where we go is something that we need to discuss as a committee. It's going to be discussed by us. But we've talked to the parliamentary officer to bring us the laws that are in the pipeline. So probably this is what we need to talk to them so that when we meet them next week, they can tell us which bills are in the pipeline, including this one, standard of compliance. But I'll give you a proper report tomorrow to that, including this one of the overseas trip. Okay. In fact, I'm saying we were given a space for next year, January 1st, and this is what we need to discuss. But I want to confirm that are they still standing by that? Because that's not the list that they gave us. Okay.
I think, obviously, they have national health services or have national health insurances, whichever, as well as Office of Standards Compliance. So that's the integral part of the green paper, you know? So we'll discuss it tomorrow.
Yeah, let's discuss it tomorrow.
Okay, I'm being reminded here that you mustn't forget reading your annual report, especially the 80 part, because we're going to be meeting 80 tomorrow. Whether? Oh, I think you've been given the annual report then. Yeah, you should look at that part that talks about the 80 report so that we can engage 80 tomorrow. No, we're not doing the annual report, but we're doing, it's going to be Auditor General and the infrastructure. But when Auditor General is here, you could look at some of the things that you could ask Auditor General. That appears on the annual report. But the annual report is being done next week. They're teaching us. Any other questions? If not, let's call it a day for today.